Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the following interview, I talked to Ed Rimmer, who's the CEO of Time Finance, who recently released an update for their full year trading to the 31st of May, and the figures were fantastic. Top line growth of 20% to 33 million. Profit before tax increase by 38% to 5.8 million. Gross lending book up 18% to 200 million. And we go through the business model and why Ed is confident in future shareholder value upside.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, it's Ed Rimmer, CEO of Time Finance. Time is ticker. Ed, thanks for joining me.
No problem, Justin. Good to see you.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get you on because you are a top performer on my website, which is the Microcap League, which is 150 microcap companies, and you are in the top sort of three there, and that's because your metrics are very good. Growth, value, health, efficiency, potential, all that stacks up. But before we get into some of the figures you've recently published, for people not familiar with Time, Ed, can you just give us a brief overview of what you do, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, we're now what's classed as an alternative finance provider, which means we're not a bank. We're independent of the banks, so we don't take retail deposits. Our job is to go and borrow the money from the banks at the best rate we can, and then lend that out at a margin, obviously the best margin we can get. Manage the risk accordingly, make sure we minimise bad debts, and out of that make a profit at the end of it. And the offerings are concentrated around key products that small businesses need for cash flow and fixed asset investment purposes to grow the businesses.
Yeah. Well, you know, many years ago when you called, I think it was 1 p.m. Previous CEO of there, but you became CEO, and I think it was 2021, and you launched a sort of 4-point, 4-year strategy. Can you explain what this was, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, it was very much on the back of those 1 p.m. days having come to an end, because we rebranded the business at the end of 2020 as Time Finance. So coming out of the COVID lockdowns, when I came back into the business and we launched this strategy, as you say, at the start of June, it was a 4-year plan, and there was four key objectives. And the first one was to become a nationally recognised SME funder. And that wasn't saying that we were looking to be recognised by all households in the UK, you know, far from it, but it was very much targeted at our key introducer audience, which traditionally is brokers and intermediaries to provide us with the leads. And it was also very much on the back of rebranding away from 1pm, which was a mixture of different brands. I think at one point we had 7 or 8 different brands, and that had come about through an acquisition strategy. So there was a lot of tidying up to do, and very much a key focus was putting the Time Finance brand into the market and making sure people understood just who we were and what we wanted to do. And, you know, I think we've come a long way. So that was the first objective. The second was to double our lending book on the basis that it had taken a little bit of a dip during COVID. There was obviously a lot of money that came into the economy from the government funding schemes in terms of the CBILS loans and the RLS schemes. So we set out to double the lending book from what was then a low point of 115 million and get it up to 230 million as a minimum. So that was the second objective. The third was to get run rate profitability back up to where we were pre-COVID. And that was taking into account that there was some more businesses in the group then, which aren't now. But we felt there was a good runway to really increase the core products, and I'm sure we'll come on to that in terms of where we are with that performance. And then the final thing was to strengthen the balance sheet through really focusing on own book lending. The business in the 1pm days was a mix of own book and broking on. and it was also a bit of consumer finance and business finance. So we decided to really focus on the business finance side of things and focus pretty much, not quite entirely, but moving towards a much higher percentage on our own book. The key asset on the balance sheets for this business is its receivables book. The bigger that is with the right deals, the more the income and profitability should increase. So that was the final objective. And also at the time, and really through a good chunk of the last 2 or 3 years, the business has been trading at a fairly significant discount to market cap. So the key objective around strengthening that balance sheet was to try and close that gap and bring us back to what I called equilibrium. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about that as we go through.
Well, I mean, you know, judging by the figures and where the share price is going, it seems to be working out. So you focus on small and medium-sized enterprises. Explain, you know, I mean, traditionally, I assume a lot of businesses have gone to their banks for this financing and loan. So why aren't they doing that now? Why is there a place in the market for time?
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, the first port of call would have always been the banks. To a degree, you know, people still go to their banks, but much less so now. That the rise of alternative finance businesses really came about through the 2008 financial crisis. More players came into the market. The banks were obviously weighed down with regulation, reputational issues, damage. So there was a rise of alternative lenders as a result of that period. So it has changed. The market dynamics have changed. But quite simply, why businesses come to ourselves is that we're more agile, we're more flexible, we're more focused on service. And the banks really aren't. That's not their market anymore. They tend to let us focus on the real smaller end of the market. They're happy to provide the finance into lenders like ourselves, and that's their part in supporting small businesses to a degree. So as long as both parties understand that, there's room for everyone. As long as the proposition is clear and understood, and that's really where we play, is that service angle that small businesses need.
Yeah. Well, I was reading an article. I think it was like 89%, I think it was, of small and medium-sized businesses have been turned down for loans from their banks, and they turn their back on smaller companies. Is that always going to be the way, or do you think a bank's going to change all of a sudden and go back to loaning to the small, or not?
Well, I came into the market in the mid-90s, and there was always a situation where the banks turned down small businesses, you know, for various reasons. So it's always been the case. It's just accelerated over the years. So I don't really see it changing dramatically. I think there's lots more alternative finance businesses in the market, as I say, like ourselves now, who are very focused and really good at providing service to small businesses, and that's not where the banks are going. You know, the banks are very focused on reducing costs and using technology to the best they can to help reduce those costs. So that's not really akin to what small businesses need, which, as I say, is support and flexibility.
Yeah. And of the sort of different solutions you provide, can you give us a breakdown of, you know, what makes up what, and explain actually different sections of solutions you provide, if you could?
Yeah, sure. So we provide two key products, which are asset finance and invoice finance. Within those two products, there's sub-products. Mm-hmm. So the key offering now within the asset finance division is very much focused on hard asset finance. Mm-hmm. And that's funding things like yellow plants, so construction equipment, you know, diggers, dumper trucks, lots of wheeled assets, lorries, trailers, and the likes, things that have got a residual value at the end of the lease. We do still have a relatively small soft asset book as well, which was where the origins of 1PM was, but we've rebalanced that now much more towards hard asset as part of our strategy. And that soft asset business provides, you know, nice returns, and it's very well spread on smaller deals. But a smaller part of the business. The other key part is invoice discounting and factoring, which effectively come within the invoice finance division. And between invoice finance and hard asset finance, they now make up 75% of our lending book. So that's where the focus is. And also on asset-based lending, which is effectively a combination of our offerings where clients need more than one product. So they may take up invoice discounts in conjunction with a loan or with hard asset finance. And we tend to secure those through second charge on properties in terms of the loan elements. So that's becoming an increasing part of our business and something that we're focused on increasing as well as part of our future strategy.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, as far as the macro picture is concerned, it's been a tough couple of years, but it doesn't seem to have held you back. And now we've got this new government that are focusing on growth, and they're making the rates, you know, the right soundings. You know, we get to, you know, judgments reserved on whether they're carried out. But I mean, is the business affected by the macro picture? Because, like I said, it's been a tough time. You've still been doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It definitely is affected on a macro basis. And the best way of describing that is probably from 2000 and post the the global financial crisis, we went into that low interest rate environment, and what that did was create actually a lot of stability, but actually a lot of sort of mundane period for lenders like ourselves. So business was fine, but actually our businesses do well in times of boom and bust, more so because it creates more demand for finance. And then of course, as I mentioned earlier, we hit the COVID times, and that massively changed because there was a huge influx of support from the government via the various schemes. So what's happened over the last 18 months or so with the increased interest rate environment, it's returned more like what I describe as sort of, you know, pre-2008, where the interest rates were just taken as normal at being sort of 4% and 5%, and businesses, you know, borrowed money at those sort of rates to help grow the businesses or to help the businesses survive. And, you know, that's the reality of what we do. We help businesses grow, but we also help businesses pay the wages. And that doesn't mean to say that they're bad businesses. It just means to say that they're not making, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds of profit each year. So I think it's really understanding the market. The market dynamics do change, and that does impact our business. But actually, in times of boom and bust, we tend to do better. And simply that is because businesses need money to survive and to grow. And I think that's the environment we're in now. The small businesses have proved really robust, you know, much more so than people think. I think, you know, 18 months or so ago when we spoke to potential investors, there was a lot of fear of what the default rates were going to look like and how bad debts were going to impact the performance. And, you know, those two things, arrears and bad debts, are just a nature of what we do, because obviously we lend money, so you're going to get some arrears and bad debts. But they're pretty well controlled, and our book is very well spread. And as I say, small businesses have proved really robust. You know, by the very nature, they're entrepreneurial, so they find a way. And you know, that's been really pleasing to see, and I see that continuing.
Yeah. So recently, on the 27th, you released a very positive full year trading update. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Ed.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think one of the main highlights was breaking through the £200 million barrier in the gross receivables. That was a really momentous milestone for us, having started this plan off at £115 million, as I mentioned, at 2001. So you know, we're on track to get to that doubling of where we started. So that was pleasing to see. I mean, the income that's locked into that book is important as well, because that gives us future visibility of earnings. So it's what we refer to as the unearned income. That was up 19% to 25 million. So as long as those customers pay to terms, that income comes into our P&L over the next few years. Profitability and revenue on the back of that growth in income in the book, you know, increased significantly. So revenue was up 20% to 33 million, and profitability was up 38% to 5.8 million, which is, again, you know, well on track to get us to that run rate of pre-COVID, when the business actually did have, you know, more entities to it, but it's now been tidied up significantly. And we're pleased with that road we're taking towards getting it back up to those levels pre-COVID. A couple of other things just to highlight. Arrears, which are really important because obviously, you know, we can lend the money, but we also need to make sure we get it back. They've reduced again slightly in terms of percentage against overall gross lending book from 6 to 5%. I don't see it going any lower than that. That's one thing I would caution at. You know, we do lend money and we will get it arrears. The key point to understand there, though, is that the arrears don't all translate into bad debt. So the net bad debt write-off was actually 1% across the average lending book. The year before, it had been 2%. So, you know, a pretty good set of figures, really. When we're growing the top line, we're growing the book, and the arrears are well controlled. And the end result of all that is that the net tangible assets increased 13% on the balance sheet to 38.5 million at the end of May. So the things that I summarized at the start in terms of our four key pillars to our plan are all on track, which, you know, we're really pleased with at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned there, you know, about the significance of growing your own book and unearned income. So explain, so if you broker out, you know, a loan, so what do you receive there? Just fees and commission, or what's the deal there?
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, we've got now to a point where 98% of our new business origination is done on our own book. I mean, historically, that was sort of 75-25. When we decided to move away from that, there's been a gradual change. But we still do have the ability to broke business out. And that could be because it's just too fine a rate. So it might be in the tier one space and, you know, it's not worth our while doing. So we'll send that to one of our tier one partners. Or it could be too high a credit risk, and we'll send that out to people who specialize in the sort of subprime market. And we take a commission for that. And that's just a one hit benefit, if you like, into the P&L whenever the deal's completed. Whereas the own book is amortized over the period of the lease or the loan. So typically that is 3 to 5 years, and that's where we see the unearned income part of our gross receivables sitting in the balance sheet. And as I said, as long as those customers pay, the elements of the interest that's due to hit our P&L carries on for however many years, you know, that's in place, which typically is 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And you recently announced an extended and improved £64 million funding facility with the British Bank. Explain the significance of that, if you could add.
Yeah, so the British Business Bank have supported us now for a good few years. So going back to well before COVID, and we decided to open discussions with them some months ago because we wanted not only to increase the facility but also look to fund slightly different asset classes. So it was condensed solely into funding our hard asset business. We have a vendor finance business which concentrates on relationships with vendor partners, either manufacturers or distributors, and it didn't include that. It now does. So not only has it increased the size of the facility quite significantly, it's enlarged it in terms of the assets that we can fund through that. And it's always been the most competitively priced facility as well that we've had in place. So, you know, that was testimony to, the relationship that we've got with British Business Bank, but also the performance that we've put in, and obviously the, you know, the back office performance as well, because, you know, they conduct regular audits. So it was nice to get through that process with what we wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, in the trading update, which I know, you know, shareholders probably like the sound of, you said you're confident the group is well positioned for future growth and in delivering further increased shareholder value. Explain why you're confident of that, Ed.
I think, well, it's really on the back of everything we've sort of discussed, Justin, really. You know, the progress so far has been good. You know, I tend to be a little bit, you know, cautious in nature because I like to make sure that we deliver. And so, you know, on the back of the last 2 years, I think we're well positioned. But also, as I say, I think the market is still conducive to lenders like ourselves who are flexible, fast, understand our market, clear on our proposition, and clear on our target market in terms of who we want to work with to get business from. You know, I think that proposition will always stand out from the crowd now, because we take it for granted that, you know, people provide a good service, but we all know as consumers that that's actually getting getting more difficult to see. You know, the amount of times you just get passed off to people who don't really understand what you're talking about, who have no understanding of your business, and end up talking to people overseas or listening to recorded messages. You know, it's a fact of what we live in these days, and we're very focused on making sure that yes, we create an efficient business, but we have people behind our business that understand our customers and clients and can provide them with good communication and sensible answers. And it sounds simple, but that's becoming few and far between in the market these days.
Excellent. Ed, it's good to chat to you. And, well done on that trading update. It's very good, very impressive. And hopefully we catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Cheers.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.